Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is with health and wellness coach, Miriam Kearns-Hussey, on reducing anxiety and stress, managing energy levels and building your self-compassion muscle or self-worth muscle. This conversation, very similar to one I had a few episodes ago with her husband, Jerry Hussey, in episode 341, is a podcast episode that is going to connect on a very deep level, very similar to that episode. And I had a lot of aha moments. I had a lot of purple polar bears, for those of you who read Rewire Your Mindset, a lot of things that connected directly with me in today's episode. And as we explore the podcast, you'll see why, because we talk about things that I haven't previously discussed on the podcast, things like holding space for, you know, inner child work, mirror work, and going deeper on trying to just disconnect from all your insecurities and working through it. And in today's podcast, we go through that. Some of the things we talked about: how stress and anxiety has become our new normal and the tools for moving past it, how to build your internal self-compassion or self-worth muscle, and the art of reframing, letting go, and the art of surrender. And we also discuss, as I mentioned, the importance of mirror and inner child work and some of my experiences with that and some of the benefits that I got, even though it's a very difficult experience and a very difficult thing to move through. It can be very useful when it comes to dealing with issues of self-worth or the constant need for external validation, two things that I struggled with a lot in my earlier life. We also talk about how small, simple life changes can make huge differences to your energy levels and emotional eating and nutritional well-being. So this episode covers a wide range of topics that are what you would expect from an integrative health and wellness coach and somebody who I respect and admire greatly for her message. So without further ado, here is today's podcast with wellness coach Miriam Hussey on reducing anxiety and stress, managing energy levels, and building your self-compassion muscle. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Miriam Hussey. Miriam is an integrative health and wellness coach, keynote speaker, and founder of Soul Space. She specializes in integrative health and wellness coaching that focuses on lifestyle as medicine and getting to the root cause of performance and health-related issues, as this is the real awakening that allows lasting change and transformative breakthroughs. Her style focuses on the mind-body connection and integrates a holistic approach to enhanced health and well-being. I'm looking forward to talking all things health and wellness in today's episode. Miriam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. I'm absolutely delighted to be here and really looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, me too. I've been meaning to get you on for ages, Miriam, because I know, weirdly enough, we've had Jerry, your husband, on before you, and we've known each other longer, and I've been meaning to kind of just overlap with a podcast, so I'm delighted that we're finally getting to do it.
Likewise.
Miriam, before we kind of go into health and wellness, talk to us a little bit about your backstory. What got you into the world of health and wellness in general? I know your background was as a pharmacist, and you kind of transitioned out from there, but tell everybody listening a little bit about your backstory.
Yeah, so I spent the guts of 15 years really between studying pharmacy and then working. I worked as a community pharmacist for over a decade. So between my years of studying and then working kind of, as you'd say, on the front line, you know, meeting people every single day, I suppose I was really, my mind was really blown open to the way that we look after ourselves in terms of our healthcare. And for me, working as a pharmacist, I wasn't long really in the system before I kind of realized, Brian, that I felt like I was working more in a sick care system where you predominantly look after people who have become ill and you try and backtrack to try and counteract some of the symptoms that have caused the lack of ease, which is the disease, as opposed to really working in a healthcare system where you're proactively or, you know, trying to help people stay well, as opposed to just managing symptoms of sickness. And I suppose in the Western world of medicine, while it's amazing and it does incredible things, and of course we need medicine, it has saved lives, I suppose I really started to look just beyond the pill for every ill sensation and beyond just looking at how one can get better or feel healthy just through one modality of curing or trying to ease the sickness, which is through a pill. And I suppose, you know, what I really was blown open was the often what we do in our Western world is, you know, it's a busy world we live in, you know, with the quick fix sometimes. And we often treat the symptom as opposed to actually opening the lid on, well, what actually is going on in this person's life that might be the root cause that might be contributing to this person feeling unwell. And I think we have to move away from the concept that wellness is all about physical, our physical being, because it's not. Our sense of self, our sense of wellness, our sense of health and vitality goes beyond just the physical body. We're not just mechanical robots made up of pipes and tubes and nuts and bolts. We are incredibly intricate and, you know, amazing species that has energy, that has thought, that has feeling, that has emotion. And so much of that contributes to the physical biology and chemical reactions that occur in the body. So I started to look beyond just the physical and beyond just the, you know, the mechanical to, well, how can our thoughts affect ourselves? How can our emotions affect our, you know, our vitality, our gut health, our heart rate, our blood pressure? How can all of the environment, you know, what's our environment that we live in, our relationships, our career, all of these things that give us a sense of, you know, purpose and confidence and courage and feel, you know, have that meaning and passion in our lives. And how does that implement or impact our sense of our health and our well-being? And I started to look beyond just what I'd been trained in. And I started to look at the importance of our nutrition. How does that impact what we put in the body? How does that impact the cells? How does that impact our food? How does that affect our mood? And I started to look at a sense of integrated well-being, which is looking at, you know, I've trained in yoga and meditation and mindfulness and yoga psychology. And I suppose by what I do now is I try and bring it all together. It's not one way or the other. What I try to do is marry all of my lessons and learnings and my own personal experience. And I try to look at the big picture approach. So when you meet someone, you're not just looking at treating the symptom. You're looking at, well, what's going on in their life? What's going on in their world? What's going on in their mind, their thoughts? What's going on in their relationships? What's going on in their diet? What's going on? Are they exercising? Are they not? How is their sleep? How is their stress? And I think probably the biggest one is the last one that I mentioned there about stress, because it has been said that up to 95% of most of our modern day diseases or inflammation is down to stress or imbalance in our nervous system. So I know that's kind of a long-winded answer, but I suppose it might give you and your listeners a little bit of a backstory, a back dive into where I've come from and what I do now, or where I prioritize my focus now is that integrated approach, looking at mind, body, soul, if you want to call it that, or really looking at lifestyle as medicine, which is looking at the way that we live our life, which is the style you're living your life in. How is the style you're living your life in every day either contributing to your manifestation of great health and vitality and performance, or how may it be contributing to self-destruction and a more lack of ease, which can manifest as a disease?
I love that, Mariam. And as I said, you know, and I'll put this over a separate introduction, I love your approach. And it's that holistic approach of asking what's going on in people's lives that may be affecting X, Y, or Z. And I'm going to double back on the pill for every ill. I think that is definitely something I want to talk on, because that line coming from your background and the approach that you take now, and the mistake or misconception people can have that, you know, I have a problem, take a pill, it'll fix the problem, as opposed to getting to the root cause, which is what you support. And that's your entire message. But you mentioned stress there. Would you say that the biggest misconception in health and wellness in is the lack of understanding around stress? Or would you say it's something else, Mariam, that people fail to consider when it comes to health and wellness?
Definitely that is a huge contributing factor, because stress can show up in different ways for different people. And I think in our society today, what's happening is people are running around and they are highly stressed and their nervous system is being overactive and it's working overtime all of the time. It's like we're the athlete on the track, never getting off to rest and repair and rehydrate and rehab. And we're running around the track and we're never giving ourselves the time and space to rest and recover. And what's happening is we end up living in this, what we call sympathetic state, dominant state of living, which is the, you know, the fight or flight side of the nervous system. But I think what's happening today, Brian, is people aren't even aware that they're in the fight or flight all of the time. because it's become the new norm. And what's happening is we can be fueling the body with caffeine and sugar and, you know, go, 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 go. And these things are fueling our lifestyle to keep us busy, when it's adding more fuel to the fire, it's adding more adrenaline to the nervous system, and it's keeping us revved up and locked in fight or flight, which is that busyness, go, 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 always on sensation. And the danger with this is it can be fine, you know, for short term, but eventually the body will say, no, 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 I've had enough of this. I can't keep going. And what happens is then we end up getting maybe a breakdown, you know, a burnout, or we get sick, because the body just says, I can't keep up at this pace all of the time. And I think what can happen is our nervous system. So, you know, we have an autonomic nervous system. We have two main sides of the nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. I won't get too sciencey on you now, but the sympathetic is that fight or flight side. You know, we need it. It keeps us on high alert. If there's danger, it gets activated to keep us safe. We get flooded with cortisol and adrenaline, which are our stress hormones. And that tells the body, you know, now you have energy, you can fight. So we evolve from the cave. You know, if a bear jumps out of you, you get your adrenaline shot. So you either fight the bear or you run the hell away. So it's fight or flight. But after the bear is gone, we were meant to stop and drop into the other side of the nervous system, which is the parasympathetic. And that all is about rest, digest, and repair. And our nervous system is always, was meant to be kind of like, if you imagine a light switch, you turn it on when you need it. So you rev it up, you know, you go into the red zone when you need it. But then you're meant to turn the light switch off and drop into the blue or the green or that calm zone where we can recover. But what's happening in our world today is we're staying in the turned on fight or flight mode for too long or permanently. And we're not allowing ourselves the time and space to rest, repair, and recover. And we're not being attacked by bears in our modern world. There's no lions or bears jumping out at us. But we are being attacked every single day psychologically by to-do lists and emails and be here, go there, turned on with our social media, with our phones. We're always contactable. There seems to be a constant sense of urgency and pressure. And then this is keeping us locked in that cycle of fight or flight, which is the nervous system revved up, turned on. And long term, this can have huge impacts on our health in terms of our digestive health. It can dampen down our immune system. It affects our heart rate, our blood pressure, our respiratory system. It affects our fertility. The body is so intelligent, it says, you know, it's not a safe world to bring a child in if you're constantly in a perception of threat and danger and urgency if you're in fight or flight. So I think the biggest thing in terms of health and wellness, to go back to your question, is yes, I think we need to understand the impact of being turned on in that stressful state for too long. And then how do we balance? How do we realign? How do we shift ourselves out of the fight or flight on a more regular basis? How do we drop into the parasympathetic, which is that rest recovery side? And really, how do we do that on a daily basis? And it comes back to simple things. You know me, Brian, I'm all about simplicity. I'm not about highfalutin, you know, fad, anything. I really believe in back to basics. And the power of the breath is probably the most important one in terms of balancing our nervous system. Looking at our nutrition, you know, coming back to eating wholesome, real, natural foods and beverages as much as we can. Getting out in nature, grounding yourself, getting fresh air, moving the body. You know, these are simple things that we probably all know about. But the more we do them, the more regularly we make them part of our routines, is the more that we can reduce our stress. And the more that we do that, we can balance the nervous system and bring us into more alignment in terms of physical health, but also in terms of our mental and our emotional well-being.
From your experience, Miriam, why don't you think that we do them? As I said at the kind of top of the podcast, and you mentioned it there, like, it's your simplistic approach that I love. It's stuff that anybody can do. Get outside and ground. Look at your nutritional choices. You know, focus on your breath. These are all things we can do that don't take up a massive amount of time, energy, or effort. From your experience, Miriam, why do you think we don't? Is it a case of a lack of education around it, or trying to figure things out and overcomplicate things? From your experience, why don't we apply these things to us, like, as somebody that from a default type A personality would be very kind of high go, 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 high anxiety, I have to focus a lot on that parasympathetic that you talked about in terms of focusing on my breath. You know, I have to do things like, you know, cold exposure, going out into the water, into the sea, things like that help me greatly. But why don't you think that most people who struggle with stress or anxiety apply these things, even though they're so potentially simple to apply in each life or each person's life? What's your experience with that, or why do you think that is?
It's a really, really powerful question. And, you know, I too, similar to you, Brian, I have to, you know, really work on it, you know. And I know my husband, Jerry, would always say the only work that works is the work, you know, is doing the work. And every day, you know, I have a tendency as well. I can really, you know, my mind can go to anxious places. I can, if I have too many tabs open, which I often do, I can end up scrambling and kind of getting overwhelmed. And I know when I let my practices slip, I really fall into that overwhelming state of feeling anxious, feeling nervous, feeling, you know, any form of kind of an overwhelm. And I think really what it comes down to, well, from my own personal experience, as well as working with a lot of women, because I know I work with a lot of women predominantly, but this applies across the board, male, female. I think sometimes it comes down to our core belief about ourself and our deservability. So our sense of self-worth, our sense of do we feel enough? And why do we feel that it's okay to neglect ourselves? Why do we feel like it's okay to not take care of ourselves and put everybody else before ourselves? And often what I see and what I experience is an underlining belief that we locked in somewhere along the way that maybe I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, everybody else is better. There's a comparison maybe mentality there. There's a sense of just feeling not maybe potentially worthy or deserving. And when that kind of voice pops its head up, and it can be very, very strong for a lot of people, we often don't value ourselves enough to do the work, or we let other people's needs, wants, desires become a priority over our own. And sometimes, you know, it's the nicest people in the world that are the hardest on themselves, because they put everybody else before themselves to be maybe seen, to be, you know, to get that external approval, to feel validated, because maybe internally we don't feel validated ourselves. So we have to do something in order to get that validation from the external world. So I really believe a core chunk of any work that we do on ourselves, on our journey towards, you know, whatever it is that you're going, health, well-being, peace of mind, contentment, success, prosperity, whatever journey you are on, I really believe a core work piece of that work is working on self-worth, working on developing inner belief systems about, you know, about your sense of self, your sense of value in the world, your sense of credibility, your sense of deservability, and really ultimately building the muscle of internal self-compassion and building that inner sense of strength, not in a strong, you know, egotistical way, but in a very, I often say the phrase that there is huge strength in our softness, or there is huge strength in our vulnerability. And when we can sit with our vulnerabilities, our flaws, and not judge them and be okay and say that is enough and I am trying my best, and, you know, today is a new day, and every day we are graced with lessons and blessings. And I think the more we can harbor more internal self-confidence through the journey of self-compassion, I think the gateway to self-confidence is through compassion. That really helps us to then value ourselves. And if we value ourselves, we're more likely to put ourselves on our priority list and therefore give ourselves the time and energy to do the work that we need on a daily basis to keep us at our best.
As someone, Miriam, who definitely is working and has struggled on building that self-compassion muscle, again, always looking for kind of tools in my arsenal for that potentially, is it something that I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast will connect similarly, that when you're have issues with your own self-worth or external validation or the I'm not enough story that you tell yourself, something that, again, I'm sure you've been through it on people that speak about it are normally the people who are either coming through it or out the other side. And I had to do a lot of work on that. But self-compassion is still something I struggle with. How would you recommend somebody go about exercising that self-compassion muscle?
Yeah, it's very true for me. It's been my journey. And, you know, I as you said, I think when you go through it, when you walk through it to come out the other end of it, you learn so much and you can almost see it everywhere you go then, because you it resonates with you. And it's not to say that I'm fully through it. I'm a work in progress myself. I think we all are. That's the journey of life. But what I think really I have found worked very powerfully for me and for a lot of the people that I work with. And, you know, we have a soul space community and this topic comes up time and time again, is a whole issue around self-worth, self-compassion, letting go of the past, freeing yourself from past limiting belief systems. And really, I think to build self-compassion, I really think it's to mirror work is one of the most powerful tools really that I found, where you have to, and we did this in our community, we did a 21-day challenge where people had to every day stand in front of the mirror, plant your 2 feet on the floor, look into your eyes, take a nice slow deep breath. And we had affirmations or mantras that people had to say to themselves. And believe it or not, people found that so difficult. But I would always say that's a great thing, because when there's difficulty, when there's resistance, when there is a blockage, that's where a lot of your answers lie. And beyond the blockage lies the greatest of opportunities. So I think mirror work is really powerful. I think any form of, you know, affirmation work, journaling, gratitude. But I think really one of the most powerful things that I have done in my own life is to write a letter, you know, from your heart. So to yourself, you know, writing a letter to your inner child. So inner child work is so powerful. So, you know, if you can imagine yourself as, you know, a child, I know Jerry talks about the 8-year-old self, but imagine, you know, he or she is upset or scared about something. What would you do? You'd go over, you'd hug them, you'd give them a hug, you'd say everything is going to be okay. What can I do for you? And when you're in a scary time in your life or something's going on, if we can apply that mentality to ourselves, because that inner child is still in there. So you kind of, you know, go after that in sense of you be kinder to yourself, be more compassionate to yourself, rather than you would never go over to a young child and shout at them or give out to them or tell them they're stupid or, you know, binge eat or binge drink. You'd never just shove food down their face or alcohol down their mouth. You'd be very compassionate. You'd go over, you'd care for them. So can we apply that to ourselves? And that kind of technique, I believe, is very, very powerful in helping build the muscle of self-compassion.
I love that. That inner child work is something that I've been doing a lot of work on recently. And it's, for anyone that's familiar or even unfamiliar with it, it's quite tricky, like holding space for your 6-year-old self, for your 8-year-old self, and then coming at it from, you know, in my case, my 33-year-old self, and trying to speak to the fears and trying to speak to the insecurities and trying to speak to the anxieties of what's probably a potential trauma, to whatever language you want to put that, they come in various degrees. It's very difficult. It's very uncomfortable work, but I think being mindful of it. And when I came across that first, I can't remember, it was actually through your page or through Jerry's, and then a couple of friends and a little bit of therapy stuff I've done on the side, you're constantly shining a light on why you react certain ways, and you're able to disconnect a little bit more from ego and see things as they actually are versus your biases or your experiences are dictating the way you see it. I think it's really, really important for people, and I'm definitely going to be taking that on board, Miriam, in terms of the self-compassion muscle and nearly doubling down on that. You mentioned, you know, the mirror work there, you've mentioned the inner child work, you've mentioned tools and techniques that work really well, such as, you know, grounding, and, you know, getting out into the ocean is something that I do do personally, very similar to the way that I ground. But is there something that you know now, Mariam, and this may be mindset related, this may be something physical, this may be something completely different in terms of anxiety, stress, or, you know, emotional well-being or even consciousness, but is there something that you know now that you wish you had known 5 or 10 years ago that was just an absolute game changer for you in terms of thinking, or anything that has supported you massively over the last 5 or 10 years that's just an automatic for you now?
Yeah, I suppose there's probably lots of things. When I think back, you know, for myself over the last 10 years, it's been lots of radical change. I've gone through so much transition in those years from, you know, moving from, you know, steady state job as a pharmacist, being employed, to diving into the world of being self-employed, changing career, working now in what I do in terms of, you know, well-being and soul space. You know, moving to Dublin, getting married, having a baby, you know, there's been so much change and transition. And I think for me, you know, the probably one of the biggest things, and it may not even sound like a big tool or technique, but it's so subtle, but I find it so powerful, is the art of reframing, really. And so if something happens in my world, in my day, and it's not what I had anticipated, had expected, you know, how do I reframe it? So, you know, that beautiful, powerful line, why is this happening to me as opposed to for me? You know, so it's reframing a situation to see it from a higher view, a higher perspective, and remove myself from the ego of trying to predict and control. I think that has been the biggest thing for me, is to loosen the grip. Unclasps the grip of fear around the lungs, and by surrendering more. And I think surrendering possibly and reframing are the two things that I've had to really use. And when I use them now, it's kind of like, as you said, it's habitual. It's just what I do now, because I know when I do it, when I surrender, when I let go, when I breathe, release, try not to predict and control, or let go of that grip of trying to make it be a certain way. It's just the surrendering. There's a freeing sensation in it. There's a liberation. There's a deep trust. And I think having faith and trust are two massive things as well that I really anchor into, especially during uncertainty or during challenging times. And actually, it was a thought of the day. I was recording yesterday and it came up, and it's just very apt now that you say that. And it was saying that man's, or human beings' biggest suffering really in our worlds is when we try to always predict and control everything. So it's looking at how do we just surrender to accepting what is. So the more we can surrender to accepting what is the more we dissolve our suffering. And I think for me, that has really helped, is reframing any situation, trying to bring the positive spin to it. And I don't like to use that word positive or negative, because that can, I'm not about, oh, you know, good vibes only, because that's not real life either. You know, we are human beings. We will experience the shit, and we have to be real about that. But it's also not getting stuck in, excuse my French, the shit. So what can we do to help remove us when we're not staying in the sludgy, you know, mucking the toes for too long either? So we do need to ground down. We do need to, you know, be real, but we also need to then try and have our tools and practices in place to allow us to come out of the victim mode, come out of that kind of self-sabotage mode, reframe, realign, get our energy back up, and get us back with the right foot forward again.
I think that's why, definitely the reason why I connect so much with you and Jerry and Soul Space in terms of your message, is the life gets hard. Like, there's shit things to deal with. I've been on retreats in the US where it's been positive vibes, and I'm like, this is brilliant. I get it, and I love this connecting to the universe and all of this, but what happens when shit hits the fan? I'm like, you know, I'm like, what happens when, you know, you've got work and you've got, you know, at the time my daughter was really young, like if you have a baby at home crying and you don't know how to make her stop, and like, you know, bad things happen in terms of your ability to not function well, if you're not sleeping well or making food choices. And I think what you and Jerry bring, and in particular with your content through Soul Space, is that, look, this is how you can think. This is the art of reframing. This is the art of surrendering. These are the things and the tools that you can use, your mirror work, etc. But life gets hard, and it's about what you do when shit hits the fan and using these tools when they're appropriate, as opposed to just putting yourself in this, you know, state in the mountains where there's no people and there's no problems and no pressures. And I love that message. I think it's why it's so valuable for people. I'm very curious, off the back of what you said, Mariam, how did you cultivate that art of surrendering? I know that is something that I definitely struggle with, and probably a lot of people listening. How did you get to the point where you're at now, where one, you know that it's a very valuable tool, two, you've mentioned that it's been something very serving to you, but three, you're in a place where you're able to teach others and show them the message? Because a lot of anxiety, stress, you know, sometimes relationships with food, sometimes issues with sleep, which can be linked obviously to stress, can come from that art of either reframing and a combination of letting go and just cultivating that art of surrender. How did you get to this point?
I think because I have been through a lot of change and transition, and a lot of it came so quickly in my own life, that I suppose, you know, sometimes you're just in a space where, well, what's the other option, you know? So I have huge belief in faith, you know, I believe in God and the divine, and that's not for everybody, but I do. And when I sit in meditation or prayer, and I open my heart to that divine message, to that energetic flow of connection to source or universe, it's just a knowingness, and it's a dropping into a sense of trusting, and that everything will be okay. And that, if, you know, that beautiful phrase, well, then if God is with you, well, then who is against you? And I tend to draw on the strength of prayer, of meditation, in any dark or difficult times. And when I sit into that space of get on my yoga mat or pray or meditate, naturally the heart opens. Naturally, I just sit into that kind of spaciousness. And within that, there's just a natural gravitation towards releasing and letting go, like untangling myself from the web of fear of the external world, untangling myself from the enmeshment of external voices and, you know, expectations. And when I unclasp myself from that external world and sit in that kind of inner spaciousness of ease and grace, there's a natural surrendering. And into that, I feel held, I feel supported, I feel trusted, I feel safe. And then in that, I often cultivate inner wisdom. And that's where I often get my insights or moments of clarity that then give me the strength to kind of keep going. So I don't know if that makes sense. Like in yoga, we talk about there's five layers, five sheets, or they're called the five koshas. And you, when you come onto a yoga mat, people often think, oh, sure, it's just a pile of, what is it like, a load of stretching? How is that even good for you, other than physical mobility and flexibility? And yes, it's great for that. But there's so much more going on. And in terms of when you get on a yoga mat, You move the body physically, and that's allowing you to move through the external layer, the outer layer, which is the physical layer. You then use the breath, which is the pranayama. Prana is the breath, life force energy. And that gets you into the energetics of the body, which allows you to drop into the energy, which is your emotions. So emotion is energy in motion. So you get to feel into what's going on emotionally for me. That then drops you into the next layer, which is about your mental thoughts. So what's going on in the mind? And that brings you down further then as you move through your class, you're moving through, you're cutting through the noise. Because when you're caught up in a noisy mind, it's very difficult to hear your intuition. So as you move through that, through the breath, you're dialing down the noise. Then you get into the innermost layer, which is you get to hear your wisdom. And then the last layer is you get to feel a sense of inner peace, ananda, which is a kind of inner bliss. And that's what happens in kind of meditation. It happens in exercise as well. Like, unbeknownst to ourselves, that's really what we're doing. But it's quite obvious in yoga, because at the end you lie in shavasana or meditation. And for me, doing that allows me to just surrender more. And in that, I hear more. And when you hear more, you kind of feel more secure because you're listening to your intuition.
And yeah, as I can speak to the exercise element, when I do longer runs, I will get that, you know, as you mentioned there, emotion is energy in motion, that clarity that comes from moving, but not stressing yourself to, you know, a maximum, like you wouldn't say a CrossFit workout or a high intensity interval workout, that just movement pattern, which again, I've experienced a lot with yoga. I haven't quite got to that level yet. It's something that I'm going to probably double back on later on in my life, just because it's not giving me the resources I need at the minute, because I haven't committed to it fully, 100% ownership on that. But when I run, I get something very similar. And I'm very curious there, because you mentioned, Mariam, about, you know, emotion being energy in motion, which is, I think, a great line for people to connect to. But how else would you recommend people manage their energy? I know that, you know, yoga and reducing stress, like we said, both of those things are going to work really well for energy levels for the reasons that you mentioned. But when it comes to actually balancing and managing energy, which is something a lot of people struggle with, are there other areas that you think people need to consider or focus on? You know, things like sleep, things like food, nutrition. What's your kind of two cents in terms of managing energy for people?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in terms of, just before we move on to that, the movement part, I think it's so important that we were utilizing, you know, movement in both ways. So we're getting high intensity, we're getting the heart rate up, where we are, you know, getting that sweat out, you know, moving toxins out of the body, and really just shaking the stress out of the body, really, as well as some of the more, you know, breath focused movement like yoga or Pilates or, you know, Qigong or whatever it might be. So there's not one or the other that's better. I think a combination of both is a wonderful kind of medicine to have. But in terms of your energy, Brian, absolutely. Food is huge. We have all known, you know, Christmas dinner, after eating a big load of food together, you get that food coma and you fall asleep on the couch and you just feel like you can't move for a week. So food, what we're putting into the body, of course, is so important for our energy. So looking again at what are you eating? How often are you eating? Most importantly, why are you eating the way that you eat? Is it out of an emotional, is it stemming from an emotion? So is it boredom? Is it anxiety? Is it fear? You know, is it whatever stress that's causing you to eat in unwanted ways? Just looking at what are you putting into the body? Is there too much chemicalized, processed, sugary foods going into the body? If so, that is absolutely going to play havoc and puck with your sugar levels, which is going to cause huge spikes of, you know, adrenaline or of energy, and then followed by a huge crash and feeling crap and feeling low. And then the more you feel crap and low, then you crave the sugar again and you're going on this vicious cycle. So you know this more than anybody. So yes, food and beverages, what we're consuming, has a huge impact. So if we want to increase our energy, we need to look at having a balanced diet in terms of sugar intake, carbs, you know, processed foods. So we want to be eating wholesome, you know, foods and beverages, plant-based as much as we can, getting huge diversity into our gut, for our gut microbiome, for the immune system. You know, we really want to be aiming to get at least 30 different types of plants, so fruits, vegetables, herbs, seeds, spices, into our diet on a weekly basis. The more we do that, is the more we increase the gut diversity, the more we increase our digestive system and our immune system, and are improving our gut health. Our gut health has a huge impact on our mood, on our brain. We have this gut-brain axis. So again, food affecting our mood, food affects our energy. And then the other one, yeah, absolutely. Sleep is a huge one. So again, how are you sleeping? What are your sleeping patterns? Have you nighttime routines? And it's not just about the nighttime, actually. You know, what's going on throughout your day, you know, in terms of your food, in terms of your stress levels, in terms of your movement and exercise? Are you too much on blue screens? You know, all of these things impact our sleep. I always use the rule 3-2-1. 3 hours before bed, really your last main meal. We don't want to be, again, churning around the digestive enzymes working hard when we're trying to sleep. 2 hours before bed really should be anything removing yourself from anything that's too taxing on the mind or the body. So nothing like too high intensity exercise, or nothing that's going to crank open the brain in terms of emails or work. And then 1 hour before bed, ideally removing ourselves from the blue screens. And then I'd look at things as well, like, you know, creating a beautiful environment in your home. So what is your bedroom like? Is it cluttered? Is it cramped? Is it noisy? Because that's going to affect how you sleep. Can you declutter the room? Can you use essential oils, lavender, rose, jasmine? You know, use a diffuser in the room. Can you dim down the lights? Can you invest in earplugs? Can you invest in an eye mask? All of these things are very simple, but have huge impacts on our sleep. So if we're sleeping better, we're going to increase our energy levels and our mood as well.
It's the small things added up that, you know, it's if you can handle these small, consistent changes, they yield massive dividends in terms of focusing on sleep quality, like you mentioned, potentially investing in, you know, a mask or earplugs. I have a white noise machine that travels with me everywhere. Like, it's the best purchase I think I've bought in definitely the last 5 or 6 years, because it just drowns out the noise. If I was traveling outside of COVID, I'll bring it with me in a hotel room, and it just drowns out that background noise and is amazing for sleep. But I want to double back on nutrition there, Miriam. Again, nutritional well-being is something that you focus on, and you mentioned really good tips for people there about the diversity of plants in particular, which I'm a big advocate of as well. But when it comes to nutrition, Miriam, what's the biggest mistake you tend to see? Again, you're in a slightly different space to me. For me, it's very much the people separating foods into good and bad categories with a weight or a fat loss goal, as opposed to understanding basic calories, macros, functions of vitamins, minerals, etc. But from your experience and from your side on nutritional well-being, what's the biggest mistake people tend to make generally when it comes to nutrition?
I think knowledge, you know, and awareness is key. And people still, I think, aren't educated enough in terms of, you know, even just the simple thing, Brian, about reading labels. I think, you know, people can be very influenced by marketing. And so they'll see something on the package cover, you know, natural collection. So it must be natural. When you look at the ingredients, it's full of just glucose syrup and sugar. So that's one thing I really try to help people, is inform people and give them knowledge so they can make their own decisions when they're in the supermarket, when they're doing the grocery shopping, so that they make better decisions in terms of the food that they're going to buy. So I think that's one huge area that we're not really informed of. I still think people, you know, the diet mentality is still huge, and people are trying to, you know, cut out carbs entirely and, you know, go on huge, drastic, you know, starvation and deprivation. And, you know, the biggest thing that I see is, or I would always try to say to people in terms of, you know, diet, and even the word DIET, the first three letters spelled the word die, you know, I'm like, is, you know, we have to move away from the mentality of just focusing on what we're putting into the body. We need to think and look at, well, what's in myself already that I need to potentially move out of before I start focusing and obsessing about what I'm putting in terms of my past experiences, my emotions, past traumas. Why am I eating in a way that I'm eating? Am I overeating? Why is that? What am I trying to suppress? What's the emotion that I am trying to run away from? What is the life situation that I am, you know, escaping from? Because we often use food, comfort food, sugar, as an escapism to try and, you know, numb or suppress something internally that can never, ever be, you know, I often use that phrase, food will fill us up, but it can never fulfill us. So I work a lot with emotional eating, and because, again, it's something I have gone through myself. So I know it inside out and upside down. And really, I suppose I see it a lot in people today is that kind of, and again, it comes back to, you know, not feeling enough potentially, or, you know, really not allowing the inner self, the true self, the authentic self to be seen in the world. And we try and hide it, we try and mask it away, we try and suppress it. And one way that people often do that or turn to is food as a way to do that. But that's a whole other episode in itself, Brian.
100%. That's a whole topic. One of the things that came back for me when I was journaling, I started journaling several years ago, and the two emotions that I linked with particular food and exercise were, for me, and again, this might be helpful for people, it might not be, but I was a boredom eater. So I generally didn't turn to it if I felt other emotions, anxiety, loneliness, etc. That wasn't my escape. But if I was bored, I would turn to food. And for me, anytime I felt lonely or alone, I would turn to exercise. So that that addiction to exercise. Again, I can't talk. I train for 100 mile ultramarathons and Ironman triathlons, but at the minute they're structured based on a specific goal versus trying to escape and numb out, which is, you know, why you do something is normally more important than what you do, from my experience anyway. And kind of loneliness and anxiety, I would turn to exercise to try and remove that feeling, and journaling helped me get there. And as you said there, a lot of it ties back to your self-worth or external validation, or just working on yourself and internally asking, why am I feeling this way? Why am I acting this way? Why is this my reaction that I get stressed out and I turn to food potentially? And journaling, as you mentioned earlier, is a tool that can potentially do that. And I think it's really, really helpful for people. But as you said, we won't go down that emotional eating. That's a whole podcast in itself. But I do have one final question, Mariam. And I'm really curious, as somebody that has done so much work on themselves over the years, has transitioned out of, you know, the career in pharmacy to doing what you're doing now, which is helping and serving people on a much grander scale to turn things backwards and inwards on themselves so that they can, you know, help themselves in the external world. But if you could go back, Mariam, to your 21, 22 year old self, what advice would you give somebody in a very similar position, or to yourself when you were in that position?
I think looking back now, I think I would have said to myself, it's okay to just be you. And it's okay to go after what's in your heart and follow it. If God or universe or whatever has placed something in your heart, I believe it has been placed in your heart specifically for a reason. And that we all have an incredible capability to help be of service to the world and to help change and shift the world and help people. And I think for me, in my early 20s, I was running, racing. I was, you know, I had a mask on. I was kind of hiding the real self from the world. I had everything in my world, you know, was validated by how I looked and my external appearance. And, you know, I didn't give myself and what was in my heart the space to flourish, because I was living potentially a life that I thought other people wanted me to live. So I would say to anybody, you know, in that space right now, I would say, you know, it's what I had to do, Brian, is I had to integrate various parts of myself, you know, and that took a while. It took, you know, work. I went to an amazing therapist. I, you know, did lots of work on myself. But there was a part of me, you know, Mariam, the pharmacist. There was the part of me that was Mariam, you know, that loved to have a great time, that loved to go out and have the crack. There was a part of me that was Mariam that was very spiritual, but I kind of kept that in the closet because I thought people thought I'd be weird, you know. So there was all these different parts to me, and I was kind of, you know, showcasing one to the world and hiding the other. And that never leads to inner contentment. That just leads to an inner tug of war, of a disharmonious sense of self. It leads to resistance. It leads to insecurity. So what I would say is, how do you integrate all of you? And I think the biggest lesson that I have learned is, not everybody is going to love me. Not everybody is going to like me. And, you know, that's okay. And I think by dissolving the need to be approved or seen or accepted by everybody, again, it's a surrendering process, has allowed me to just be me. And if people like that, wonderful. And if people don't, that's okay too. So I think it's a long-winded answer, Brian, but I hope that makes sense.
Not at all. That is such an amazing way to finish. Such a empowering note for people. I think, you know, my mum used to always tell me that you're not everybody's cup of tea, but you're somebody's shot of whiskey. And I think once you get content with yourself and build your self-worth, you start surrounding yourself with those people whose shot of whiskey you are. And life, from my experience, again, by far have not figured it out, as it's a process and it's constantly evolving, but it makes it a lot easier to bring those people into your space, and then life seems a lot more fulfilling, from personal experience anyway. So I think that's a wonderful way to end, Mariam. For everybody listening, I've loved this conversation. I've been meaning, just, and I didn't tell you this beforehand, we met in, I think it was 2018, was it Wellfest originally? And I was like, oh, I must bring Mariam on the podcast. So this has been about 3 years in the waiting, but I will blame COVID for part of that.
Fine timing, Brian. It happened exactly as it meant. So that's what I believe anyway.
Yeah, 100%. Again, God, the universe, this is when it was meant to happen. So I've loved it. So thank you so much, Mariam, for everything you do. Thank you so much for all the amazing value you shared. For everybody listening, where is the best place for them to connect with you, or any other links you want to give now for coaching or for Soul Space? Please do that now.
Well, thank you, Brian, and thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Soulspace.ie is our website. Instagram, you can get me there at Merkerns_integrated wellness, long one, or Soulspace the Experience. And I suppose I'm a new mom, so I obviously prioritizing my time. And at the minute, I am running the Soulspace community, and that's kind of where I'm giving my energy to, and I absolutely love it. It's a space we have. It's a community of incredible people, and I'm just blown away. They're making life changes. They're transforming their worlds, and it's just mind blowing. So the community is where I'm at the moment. There's weekly meditations. There's daily thoughts for the day. There's yoga 3 times a week. There's physical sessions. There's weekly masterclasses, and then myself and Jerry come on once a week and do a live webinar on a Monday night with our community members. We open up the floor to Q&As. We do connectivity sessions. We bring in guest speakers. So there's lots and lots going on in the community. So if anyone does want information or to contact me or kind of work with me, just drop me a message on Instagram or soulspace.ie.
And for everybody listening, I will link everything Miriam said in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the link in the description wherever you're listening to podcasts. So click on through, follow the Instagram page, go check out the website. And Miriam, thank you so much again, as I said, for all that you do, for coming on and sharing your value in this long overdue podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, Brian. I just want to say right back at you for everything you're doing in the world. You're a shining light, and keep it up because you're doing amazing things.
Thank you so much. There you have it. Wellness coach Miriam Hussey on reducing anxiety and stress, managing energy levels, and building your self-worth or self-compassion muscle. Again, this is one of these conversations that I'm going to be going back on several times, very similar to the episode with her husband, Jerry, episode 341, that got me thinking a lot about some of my own belief systems, some of my own way of thinking, and challenging some of those thoughts that may not be supporting me anymore. So I hope you got as much from today's episode as I did. As always, if you did, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories. You can tag myself Miriam. She is Miriam_Kearns_wellness, and I am Brian_Keen_fitness. That is everything from this week's podcast. Catch you all next Monday.